It's really fun to be together tonight, and fun to be in this place, and fun to introduce my wife. Now, I met her sometime back in the 60s. I don't remember exactly when. walking across campus at Chapel Hill, and I was immediately attracted to her brain, and wanted to develop a close-knit, intellectually-based relationship with her. And we became best friends. And then a year or two out of college, we got married. She came up to New Jersey. She worked as dean of women at a college up there and put me through grad school. And then we moved to South Carolina, and she started having children. And very quickly, we had five children in 7 years. And so she was busy. And I wasn't probably the most helpful father in the city. And she taught me a lot. As the kids got older, she started writing. And I'll never forget when she first came and she said, "I want to write a book about child raising. I've learned some important lessons." So I said, "Well, honey, you know, I've written books, and I don't really think you should do that. It's really hard, and nobody buys them, nobody reads them, and you can't spell very well, and I just don't think." Well, I made her so mad, so she wrote a book called "And Then I Had Kids." That book has just this last month gone out of print after being in print 25 years, sold 100,000 or more books. Anyway, now she's a grandmother with just about more grandchildren than we can count, and we've been married almost 44 years this summer. And I'll just tell you just a couple of things. I won't go on, but she's very energetic. She decided she wanted to run a 10K, so last weekend she ran in her first 10K and came in first or second in her age category and the whole thing. I couldn't even run across the football field, and she ran the whole thing. She's very energetic. She never saw a challenge that she didn't like. She's kind. She's thoughtful. She's creative. She's full of ideas. A lot of them are from me, and I try to deal with that as best I can. She has... She's helped me understand women better. She's helped me understand myself better. She's helped me to be a better man. She's helped me to understand God better. And I'll tell you one thing. Life with her is never dull or boring. She's really the ideal woman, almost. She hates to shop. She hates to spend money. She loves to curl up in front of the television and watch football or baseball with me. She will tell me what she thinks, but she doesn't nag. And she's just a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you. So, am I on? I'm on. Okay, great. Thank you so much. And guys, please feel free. There's seats down here, so it will not bother me as you come in late. That's fine. I apologize that you had a hard time getting in, but we're glad you're here. Well, I have to tell you, in all honesty, I have two emotions right now. On the one hand, I'm terrified, and on the other hand, I'm thrilled. I mean, who else gets to be the only woman in a room with 150 good-looking men? I mean, it's kind of overwhelming to be in your presence. So thank you for giving up an evening to come here. I just feel truly honored that you all are here, every one of you, for this event. I realize some of you were coerced into coming by your wives, by your friends, perhaps by your fiancé, and maybe even some of you by your daughters. So I thank you for coming, because it's a real tribute to the women in your life that you actually came. You need to know that. It's a real tribute to the women in your life that you're here. Well, several years ago, my husband John asked a dear friend of ours who had been married for over 50 years this question. Dr. Hendricks, he said, do you understand your wife? Well, Dr. Hendricks replied, understand her? Never. Enjoy her? Yes. I thought that was a wonderful response. And I want to tell you, first off, that you will never understand your wives. So you can now heave a real big sigh of relief. You will never understand her. I hope you will continue to enjoy her, though. I also want to let you know that I'm not here to fix you. I'm not here to tell you everything you're doing wrong. I'm also not here to send you home changed men. Change takes place gradually, one step at a time, and often one step forward and two steps back. What I hope I can do tonight is simply to enlighten you about women, about your wife, about your daughters, your sisters, your mothers, or even your colleagues. What I share will apply mainly to those of you men who are married, but hopefully it will also apply to some of the other women in your life. And some of you I know are engaged, so this will apply to you as well. How you hear and apply these things we're going to talk about will also impact your children. Your son is learning how to treat his future wife by watching you. And your daughter is learning what to look for in terms of a husband as she lives with you and observes you. So this time tonight has really ramifications for many of our personal relationships. Research has shown that the number one need a man has from his wife is respect. Yeah, sex is near the top of the list, too. But actually, what men most want is to be admired or to be respected. On the other hand, a woman's number one need is love. She needs to be loved. So tonight, we're going to take a look at how you can make your wife or the other women in your life feel loved. And we're going to look at six needs that women have that will enable them to feel loved. And the first one is security. You know, we live in a city of contracts. D.C. is a major city where contracts are written for all sorts of things. And when you write a contract, usually there's an escape clause where a party can disengage if the other party doesn't live up to what has been projected in the contract. There's usually an escape clause. But when God created marriage, he didn't create a contract. He created a covenant. A covenant was meant and is meant to be a permanent commitment between two sinful people that will last a lifetime. Genesis 2:24 really screams security. A man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So when we think in terms of the needs that we have as women, our first need is that of security. We want to be living in a covenant relationship, not living under a contract. And what's helpful for your wives is for you to reconfirm this sense of security all throughout your married life. Now, I don't know if you can remember the first argument that you had when you were married, but I remember the first argument that John and I had. It was during that first year of our marriage, and I don't have a clue what the argument was about, but I remember bursting into tears and saying to my husband, maybe we never should have gotten married in the first place. Now, John is a really sort of stable guy. He never gets real up, and he never gets real down. He's just sort of Mr. Stable. But at that moment, he got in my face and he got angry. And he got eyeball to eyeball with me. And he said, Susan, don't you ever, ever, ever say that again. We are married, period, and we will work this argument and subsequent ones out. But don't you ever say that again. Well, he scared me so badly, I've never said it again. But what he gave me in that moment, which he didn't even realize, was a sense of security. Our marriage was not to be questioned. It was permanent. And that's something that we women long for. We long for a sense of security. There will be times in each of our marriages when we find ourselves in a hard place. Our friends Jim and Sally, a number of years ago, found themselves in a hard place. They found out their son, who was 17 at the time, had been abusing drugs and alcohol for 4 years. They found out in one of those scary moments when the call came at midnight from the police, and the policeman said, "I have your son. He's all right." That was the good news, but he's been arrested and he's in jail. Now, this couple had done everything they could to raise their children right. They'd raised their kids in the church. They were the ideal couple, the ideal parents. And yet it doesn't always work out the way we hope. As they hung up the phone, they decided to leave their son in jail that night. Sally burst into tears, and Jim went into Mr. Fix-It mode. But God somehow gave him a really important insight. He turned to Sally and he said, "Sally, we may be looking at some really tough years, but whatever happens, we are not going to let our marriage be taken down because of this crisis with a child." And often when you have a crisis with a child, it can impact your marriage in a very negative way. And so what Jim wisely said to his wife was, "Right now, we are going to repeat our marriage vows to one another, and we're going to ask God's protection on our marriage." And you know, I marvel at a man who had that insight, that that would be his first response, which was to be a number of difficult days ahead. He recommitted himself to his wife and just prayed for God's protection over their marriage. Some time ago, I remember we were struggling with something. I, again, don't even remember the issue, but it's been recent. And I was feeling really fragile and worried about whatever it was. And Johnny came to me, and he simply put his arms around me, and he said, "We're going to get through this. It's going to be all right." That was a very practical way that he gave me a sense of security. I want to encourage you to keep that in mind when you find your wife upset or in need, that one of the things she needs is a sense of security. She may say to you, "Well, how can you say it's going to be all right? What if?" and begin a litany. Just stop and pull her into your arms and just hug her and say, "It's going to be all right. God is in this. It's going to be all right." Now, you may be saying this as an act of faith, because we don't know how things will turn out. But we do know that God loves us and that he will protect us and provide for us. We go to God not because of who we are or who we are not, but because of who he is. He's the champion of our marriage, and he cares for us. Your wife will respect you because you take seriously the responsibility of the covenant, and because you know that God has you. Now, I want to just say a word to those of you who are single here. Do not enter into marriage with an escape clause. Not, "We will get married, and if it doesn't work out, we can always do A, B, or C." What that will breed is insecurity. Divorce should not be a word that's in your vocabulary as you walk into marriage. You walk into marriage to be committed till death do us part. And that gives your wife a sense of security. Your wife needs to have the reassurance that you are for your marriage. Your role as men is to be the keeper, the guardian of the relationship, relying on the power of the Holy Spirit. The security that you give your wife will breed respect on her part for you, which is what you need. So as you give her security, she will in turn respect you. So that's the first thing the women in your life need, a sense of security. And this is also holds true for your daughters. Secondly, protection. Now, there's a lot of tension in today's culture about this, and many of us women have confused you men, because we've adopted the mentality of, yeah, but I need to be able to take care of myself. I want to be independent. And this is true, but the reality also is that she wants to know that she can count on you. And I need to apologize to you all because I know this is confusing for you because you're sort of being pushed and pulled. We want our independence, and yet we want protection. And so on behalf of all the women, I apologize for the confusion we have caused you in this area. But I look at 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, and it says, "But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith, and it is worse than an unbeliever." Well, what does protection look like? It looks like provision for housing, providing for her, for food, for basic needs, for life insurance, so that she will be taken care of if you happen to go first. It also looks like protection from danger. Make sure that she has a safe vehicle. It's a very practical way of showing her that you're protecting her. It also looks like protection from abuse, from extended family, from neighbors, or verbal abuse from your kids. You know, I've never heard of a family where that had children that didn't talk back. You know, it's just inherent in all of our households. Kids talk back. And one of the ways that you can protect your children is by not permitting them to talk back to your wife. That protects your kids. It protects your wife. I heard of a husband once who was witnessing a toddler verbally abusing his mom. And he got in that toddler's face and he said, "You may not talk to the woman I love in that manner." Oh, can you imagine how that made his wife feel? It made her feel protected. It made her feel honored. And it was a great dad who took a firm stand like that. So that's just one little example of how protection might work out in your family. Your wife needs to feel like she's your greatest treasure. You're modeling for your son how to care for his future wife. Think about the boy who might ask for your daughter's hand. You will want to know that he will provide for her and protect her. Again, when your wife feels protected and stood up for, she will respect you. She will respect you because you're being the man. A third thing that she needs is spiritual leadership. Now, this is very interesting to me. Several years ago, I gave a survey to a bunch of women. Excuse me. Of different ages and seasons in life. And I gave the same survey last month to an equal number of about 100 women. And in this survey, I asked them, what 3 to 5 things do you wish your husband knew about you that you find it hard to express or find it hard for him to understand? Of the above, which is the most important? And I got an amazing variety of answers, but there were some very similar themes. And one of the top 3 things that was repeated over and over again was, "I want my husband to lead our family spiritually." God has a divine order for the family. In Ephesians 5:23, it says, "For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is also the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body." You are called to lead. However, there's some things this doesn't mean. This does not mean that you have to know the most. It does not mean you have to have the most biblical knowledge. It does not mean that you have to be the one who prays all the time. What she longs for in your leadership is that you be the initiative taker. Not necessarily the one with all the background or the knowledge, but the one who is willing to take initiative, even if it's you asking her to lead the family in prayer. If you're not comfortable doing it, you exert your leadership by simply delegating it. That's what a great leader does. He delegates. So that's what she's after. She's after you're simply being the initiator. And I hope that will relieve you. You don't need to be intimidated by her knowledge. She may know more. She may have been in Bible studies or churches forever. You may not even go to church or even believe in God. That's okay. You honor her by asking her to lead in some of these areas. Sometimes when we consider the leadership passages, we wrongly assume that the man has to have all the knowledge. No, I think what he needs to have is the desire to initiate. I want to say just a word in terms of initiating that I think is so helpful. One of the things that your wife will really appreciate is simply the fact that you pray for her and your children. Probably the thing I most admire about my husband is that he's a man of prayer. Our whole life, ever since we were first married, he's gotten up really early in the morning and prayed for me and for the children. And if my kids were here, they would echo my same sentiments. That is the mark that he has left upon each of our five kids, is the fact that he simply gets up and prays for us and for our kids. I'm just going to put in a plug here. He has written a book called How a Man Prays for His Family, and it's a really good book. One of the ways that you can build intimacy and lead spiritually in the family is by praying with your wife. This may feel really awkward, but actually praying together with your wife is one of the most intimate things you can do. And I wanted just to give you a challenge if this is something new for you and you would like to do it, because when you first begin to pray with somebody, it can feel really awkward. But anything that's new is by nature awkward. So you just jump in and you go for it. And what I would like to suggest is a 24-day challenge. If you begin today, this would end on Memorial Day. And simply make a commitment to pray with your wife every day. And you can try it in this manner. Ask her to share with you one concern that she has on her heart for that day. It may be a relationship with a child. It may be a project at work. It may be an extended family awkwardness. Whatever is on her heart. It's not a time to give advice. It's just a time to ask for one concern on her heart. Then you share one concern on your heart. It may be a situation at work where you're having to fire somebody, or you may be stressed about finding a job. Then you pray a one-sentence prayer for her need and ask her to pray a one-sentence prayer for your need, and simply join hands and pray the Lord's Prayer together. This could be the most intimate, life-changing thing you could do in your family. So I would encourage you, if you're not in the practice of praying together with your wife, to use this template just as an example and try it for 24 days. And see what happens in your relationship. It will impact your marriage, and it will impact your kids. There's a wonderful proverb. A proverb is simply a wise principle. And this is what it says. It's from Proverbs 14:26. He who fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for his children it will be a refuge. Notice what the refuge is. It's not daddy. It's daddy's faith. It's the fear of the Lord, and that's the refuge for your kids. Your faith provides a refuge for your children. So that's a little bit about spiritual leadership. A fourth need that your wife has is that of attention. And this comes in several different ways. A first way is simply listening to her. This was another thing that showed up on the surveys that I did. How so many women said, I just want my husband to listen to me, not try to fix me. It's really easy for you to hit the front door and to hit a really, especially if you have are a father of young children, to hit a really haggard, tired, blown out wife who's had it watching children all day. And she's not gotten anything accomplished and her time management skills have gone out the window. And what she doesn't need is a husband to sit down and say, okay, let's figure out how we can solve your problems. What she needs is a husband who would just sit down and throw his arms around her and say, honey, I know it must be so hard, and I appreciate what you're doing. There are times that we look for solutions, and there are times that we simply want to vent. And I know it's hard on you guys to come home to a wife who just needs to vent, but she's desperate. And sometimes it's you that needs to vent. Just a couple years ago, this shows how you keep growing in marriage all of your life. We never quite get there. We're all going to be in process in marriage. And as Johnny mentioned, we will have been married 44 years this summer. And just a couple years ago, we discovered a new way to help with this problem solving versus listening. Because sometimes I'm the one that wants to problem solve. And he will come in from the office and he will be discouraged about something. And I will say, well, if you only did this, 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 and this, you know, and I'll have three things he should do. Or perhaps he'll come in and I'll be discouraged about something and he will turn immediately into the problem solver. Well, that just begins friction. And so what we've learned to do is to ask this question, and it's really made a big difference in our relationship. Honey, is this a time you need me to just listen, or is this a time you want some solutions? And then we honor what the need is. And sometimes later is a better time to think through solutions. Usually a person just wants to vent. So just simply asking that little question has really revolutionized our conversation. Honey, is this a time you simply need me to listen? Or is this a time you want me to be a problem solver and help you think through some solutions? So one of the things that the women have said repeatedly to me is, I just want him to listen. And one woman said, I want him to look at me eyeball to eyeball when I'm talking to him. So that means, guys, put aside your smartphone. Don't sneak a look to see if you got a text. Just look them in the face and listen. They will feel loved by your listening. You know, attention for a woman, and this is going to sound crazy, but attention for a woman is really a type of foreplay. She needs to connect emotionally before she can connect physically. Now, I know that's crazy, and you cannot understand that. Just accept it. It's true. Women are different from men, and in so many ways, but particularly in the physical. Chores, doing chores for her, leaving her post-it notes around the house. There are many ways that you can connect with her on an emotional level. A text during the day. Hey, honey, I was just thinking about you. Hope you're having a good day. That is all really a part of foreplay for a woman. So listening is something that will communicate your attention. Another thing is talking. Now, we women have a greater capacity and a greater need to talk than you men do. And we have a greater desire probably to communicate at a deeper level. And I know it can drive you crazy. And again, I'm sorry. But that's just how God made us. And I do apologize for frustrating you men in this area. My husband says, a woman thinks a marriage is working well when they can talk about it at home. A man thinks his marriage is going well when they don't have to talk about it. And that's really true. That's really true. Neither is wrong. We're simply made differently. My son-in-law, McLean, called me today, and he said, Susan, tell the men about a book called Voices of the Heart by a man named Chip Dodd. He said, it has been so helpful to me, not only in learning how to go to a deeper level of communication in my marriage, but also in my relationships with our kids and with other men. In fact, my son-in-law said, every Monday morning I get together with five guys before work to share and work through the principles of this book. It has greatly revolutionized his life and the other men that he's involved with in how to go deeper in communicating with his wife. And the book, again, is called Voices of the Heart by Chip Dodd. Another aspect of giving your wife attention is simply anticipating her needs. It shows her that you're thinking of her. Honey, I see you have a busy week ahead. How about I take the kids for a couple of hours so you can get some stuff done or just go for a walk by yourself? Or why don't I pick up some dinner on the way home from work tonight so you don't have to cook? It's simply thoughtfulness. Tell her that you love her. Now, this sounds so crazy to say, but you men probably don't need to be told, I love you all the time. It just sort of goes right over your head. But women need to hear it. We just need to hear it. You know, and it's, Johnny and I used to have a joke. I'd say, honey, do you love me? And he'd say, well, I married you, didn't I? But, you know, that's not enough for us women. We want to hear it over and over again. So even if it's not all that meaningful for you to hear it from us women, you'd rather us demonstrate it, we need to hear those words. Tell her that she's beautiful. Several women said to me, I wish my husband would tell me that I'm beautiful because I don't feel very beautiful. That means so much to her. And particularly when you tell her that when you're not right hoping to have sex. When you tell her that when that's not what's on your mind. It has a lot more meaning. And it really has meaning when you say it in front of your children. I remember my dad on occasion would throw his arms around my mother and he would say, kids, this is the most beautiful, best woman in the entire world. Now, we kids would just roll our eyes at dad. But you know, it gave us a sense of security and it taught my brothers how to be affectionate with their wives, just seeing my dad model that. So that's a little bit on the attention we need. A fifth need that we have is simply that of affection. Now, again, this is where men and women generally are very different, and all of this is general. I know there can be exceptions where men are more like women and women seem to be more like men. But generally speaking, we are so different. Men are turned on by sight, for example. Women are turned on by touch. Very different. Men, when they're becoming sexually active, are much more sexually desired, are much more like a microwave. It's zap. Women are slower to warm up. We're like a crock pot. It takes a while to get us going. And it just really helps to recognize these differences. And God made us this way for a purpose. But we can't expect each other to be like we are. So you have to be patient with we women. And no, don't try to understand us. This is not about understanding us. The reality is you can never completely understand us. You just have to accept the way we are. Another piece of affection is simply touching. And this means particularly non-sexual touching. One woman said in the survey, I need cuddles and affection more than sex. But more of the first would lead to more of the second. So remember that, guys. We're simply different. Often foreplay begins in the kitchen with helping with chores, with helping with dishes, with helping with kids. Another aspect of affection that really helps is dating. I would just love to encourage you to put a date on your smartphone calendar sometime within the next month that you would plan and that you would make the arrangements for. Again, we women need to be courted. We need romance in a way that you don't. And so it's a way of caring for us is by taking the initiative and planning a date. And then what would be really the goal is that your dates would become regular. And you might take turns planning it. You might plan a date for the first month and surprise her. And then she creates one for the second month. You don't have to do it all. But if you initiate the practice, she will follow your leadership. There's a challenge here. Again, I would just love to challenge you to plan a date with your wife between now and when school is out. Think in your head, what would she like? You know, would it be a hike along Great Falls? Would it be dinner out in D.C.? Make the arrangements, get the babysitter, and take her out. You will get so many points for that, and she will feel loved. You know, we all go to professional enrichment courses to add to our professional resumes, to learn more, to improve in our professions. But how often do we think about going and taking a course to improve our marriage? I would really like you to consider investing in your marriage and going to a marriage retreat or a marriage enrichment one weekend every year. We do that in our professions, and yet how much more important is our marriage and our relationship with our kids and our future in-laws and grandkids? We have a resource page for you that has many suggestions. John and I speak at Family Life's Weekend to Remember conferences. So I totaled up, we have been to probably 46 marriage conferences in our life. We've been married almost 44 years. And I have to tell you, it has encouraged our marriage. And yes, we've been speakers, but we're always paired up with other speakers. So we learn from them. And it has really enriched our marriage. So let me encourage you to take steps to invest in your marriage. So we've looked at five things a wife needs or a woman needs: security, protection, spiritual leadership, attention, affection, and finally, appreciation. Appreciate the season that she's in. If she's in the season of parenting young kids, she is exhausted. Perhaps she's gone home from a really exciting career to be a stay-at-home mom. That's a huge adjustment. Perhaps she's in a stressful new job. That's a huge adjustment. Maybe she's going through menopause and she's acting crazy and having hot flashes. That's hard on her and it's hard on you because you never know what you're going to come home to. But again, we cannot control our hormones. She may be going through a job change or the empty nest. She has lots of adjustments. And so it helps her if you appreciate the season of life that she's in. And notice her cycle. One of my friends said this to me yesterday, just please help the husbands to understand that I turn into a witch once a month. And I don't like the woman I am, and I don't want to be that way. But I can't help it. It's my hormones. And if he knows what's happening and we talk about my cycle, then it sort of lays it all out and he knows he's not the problem. It's just I'm a little crazy because of my hormones. And you don't take it personally. So if you're married, talk with your wife about her cycles and when is that time that you might need to be extra sensitive to her and not take it personally. She doesn't like herself that way either. And, you know, you might, if you work in the marketplace with another woman, of course, you can't have that kind of a personal conversation with her. That would be really inappropriate. But let me encourage you just to kind of notice. I mean, John actually once sort of began to notice when one of his colleagues was really particularly irritable, and it seemed to be about the same time every month. And so when she would get really irritable with him, he would realize, oh, it's not really me. It's just the wrong time of the month. And that was really helpful to him. So you can practice that also with your daughters as they go through puberty. It will just encourage you not to react because it's not you. It's just her hormones. Appreciate the everyday things she does. This affirms her value. It's crucial. Carpooling, working, the chores, the shopping. Perhaps she's bought all the Christmas and birthday gifts for your family her whole life. It's just expected. Appreciate that. Particularly if you're married and you have young children, your wife is depleted because she doesn't get much appreciation. I mean, how many of you would have a four-year-old who would say, Mommy, you're doing a great job of raising me? You know, it just doesn't happen. You know, a mother at home with young children does not get appreciated very much, and she needs to be appreciated. Sometimes it's fun just to get I appreciate you or I love you note for no reason. I call it the no reason gift, a post-it, fresh flowers, a gift, not because it's Mother's Day or her birthday or because you're trying to make up from a quarrel, but simply for no reason. It affirms her and it appreciates her. Appreciate her need for girlfriends. Many men are threatened by women who want to hang out with other girls, but let me tell you, it will strengthen your marriage because women need women and men need men. And often women can give to another woman encouragement and empathy and understanding that will then get you off the hook. Because you cannot give to your wife everything she needs. So encourage her to spend time with other women, to go on women's retreats, to go out on a girls' night out. It will help your marriage, I guarantee it. And then appreciate her unique gifts and encourage the development of them. Your wife may have gifts that you don't have, and it's easy to be threatened by that as men, because you think you're supposed, in some ways, to be better at everything, and all of a sudden, your wife is better in some areas than you are. Don't be threatened by that, because God has made her to complement you, not compete with you, and to fill up your gaps as you fill up her gaps. So applaud the gifts that God has given her and encourage her to develop them. She may be self-conscious. She may lack confidence. And one of the ways that you can care for her is to encourage her to take a risk, to point out to her the gifts that you see in her. Honey, you have incredible organizational skills. Honey, you have a love for the elderly like no one I've ever seen. Honey, you're a visionary. Honey, you have a gift of writing. Honey, you are so organized. Ask God to show you the gifts and the way he's packaged your wife. And then come under her and encourage her. And particularly if you have wives that are approaching the empty nest and she has pretty much given up her gifts during her child-raising years, she's lost her confidence and she's going to need some encouragement for what's next once the kids leave home. Encourage her to take a risk, to take a class, and believe in her. That's a wonderful way of loving her. And then finally, appreciate her in front of others. Appreciate her in front of your children, in front of your colleagues, in front of your parents, in front of her parents, and in front of your friends. A friend of mine was telling me recently of an experience she had that I hope will give you a little insight into the heart of a woman. Her husband was being given an award, and she was there, and she is an amazing wife, and they are both deeply committed believers, and they have a strong marriage. And she has worked very hard to support her husband in his career in every way. And as he stood up to receive his award, he was quick to thank his team, his colleagues, other people who have had an influence on him, people in his community, but he never mentioned her. And it really saddened her. And she couldn't tell him. Because to tell him would sort of undo it in a way, because she wished that he had thought of it himself. I don't know if men are like this, but when a woman goes to read a book, you know, one of the first pages she reads the acknowledgement page. If her husband has written the book, or if anybody else has written the book, she reads the acknowledgement page to see if he thanks his wife. That's what the reader, is, if she's a woman, is looking for. Did this writer, did this man appreciate his wife and thank her in the acknowledgements? You see, it's the really little things in our lives that we need to hear from you all. We need to hear that you appreciate us. So, six things that will help your wife feel loved. Security, protection, spiritual leadership, attention, affection, and appreciation. Now, I just have a closing little illustration for you. I have a flashlight here. In fact, I have two flashlights. And you'll see that this flashlight is pretty strong. It's got good batteries. It's got new batteries. And this flashlight, I don't know if you can tell, but it's really dimming. Do you see? It's just fading because the batteries aren't very strong. Well, we women have an emotional tank that sometimes gets low. Just sort of like this flashlight is dim because the batteries are getting low. Our emotional tank gets low. It's similar to having a triple A battery. We have the need for, to narrow it to three, we have the need for the built-in need for attention, for affection, and for appreciation. When you sense that things are getting a little tense at home, and you wonder if you've done something to be in the doghouse, it might help to simply do a battery check. You might not be in the doghouse at all. It may just be that your wife's battery, the AAA battery, that carries her need for affection, attention, and appreciation is getting a little low. It's helpful to ask yourself the question, what can I do? What one thing can I do or say today to recharge her batteries? To recharge her batteries. No one has this marriage thing all figured out. I want to encourage you that the beautiful thing about life is that we're all people in process, and we're going to mess up big time. And there's not one thing that can't be forgiven. God is in the process of making all things new. And it's never too late to do what's right. And nothing is impossible for God. In Luke 1:37, it says, "For nothing is impossible for God." God can take the biggest mess and redeem it. And one of the things that I would love to encourage you with, and we actually have one for you, is we have some AAA batteries. We're going to give each one of you, as you leave, a little AAA battery to keep in your pocket, to remind you to think about your wife's tank and her need for appreciation, affection, and attention. And so when you slip your hand in your pocket to grab some change and you feel that battery, let it be a reminder to you and ask that question. How can I build her up in these three areas? Attention, affection, and appreciation. Thank you guys for listening. What a privilege to be with you.
Thank you, Susan. We're going to take a minute and take some questions. But before we do that, why don't you turn in twos and threes and share. This is one thing I heard that was really, really helpful. Okay, so just turn, maybe introduce yourself to the guys if you don't know them next to you, but then share. Here's something that really helped me. I really appreciated this. And then we'll take some questions in a minute. Yeah. Let's go ahead and try to take a couple questions. I know that there are several things I heard that were helpful. Might be good. Perhaps you, sir, in the front, maybe you have a question, something you learned that might be good. But I know there are questions that we may have for follow-up. I'll walk around and try to make sure I hear and can communicate to Susan. But are there questions that some of you guys have? Yeah, DJ. Okay, I think we're recording, and I want you guys to be able to hear. So DJ has two daughters, and his question to Susan is, as a father, how does he thoughtfully parent them as they enter the teen years as a father?
That's a great question, DJ. And I would just say simply be involved in their lives and verbally say to your daughters over and over again, I want you to know that I will be here for you forever. And I love you, and I just want to be here for you. And, you know, the great thing about our kids is our kids are not looking for perfect parents. They know more than anyone else that their parents are not perfect. What our kids are looking for and what our kids need are honest parents, parents who are willing to say, you know, I shouldn't have said what I did. I messed up. I blew it, and I need to ask you to forgive me. This is sort of taking off in another direction, but I can't tell you how many times I've had to go to my husband and to my children and say, I shouldn't have said what I did, or I shouldn't have done what I did, and I need to ask you to forgive me. Will you forgive me? I can't think of a single time I have gone feeling like it. We go to one another asking forgiveness, not because we feel like it, but out of obedience. And sometimes it takes time for healing to be restored. But I think authentic, humble men are mighty men. And so don't be afraid when you say things or do things that you later reflect on and think, I shouldn't have handled it that way. She will admire you if you go to her and say that. But just reemphasizing to her, I love you. I'll always be here for you. That's a great question.
That's great. Other questions? Yeah, Tom, I'll go here and we'll work our way up. So 10 years into marriage, what's one piece of advice you'd give so we get to 40 years?
That is a great question. Yeah, oh, my husband has a great answer to that.
I said, you just got to keep a sense of humor.
You know, I think that's really true. One of the things that has really helped in our marriage, and I think my husband has really grown in this because he's not naturally Mr. Funny. but sometimes in a really tense moment when you're either going to explode or it's going to be all right, he will just do something totally wacky, like start dancing or clapping or make funny faces, and it just catches me so off guard. It dissolves all the tension. So I think humor is crucial in a relationship. And also that works with your kids. Right. How do you apply these principles in a dating relationship when you're not joined together in a union? Well, I think kindness and thoughtfulness. But one thing that I would also say to the men today is you need to be initiative takers. You don't ask a girl out and say, well, what do you want to do? That does not impress her. She wants a decisive man who takes initiative. And you might say, look, I'd like to go out with you. I've thought of three different things that would be fun to do. And these are the three things. Would you like to pick? Which would be your top choice if you're unsure? But women want men who will take initiative. They don't want men who are looking to them to make the decisions and lead. Now, they want to have a part of decisions. But I think one of the things that's really hard today is men are fearful of taking leadership. And women have become so bossy, we make it hard for you to lead. And I apologize for that. But that's one thing. I think when you're first starting to date somebody, the important thing is just get to know them as a friend. You know, the best friends make the best marriages. Do different things with them. Introduce them to your family. Be in her family. Know each other's friends. You learn a lot by hanging out with the friends of the gal you're dating because you learn the type of people that she's attracted to. And just don't be afraid of commitment. And another thing that's helpful, the further you get along in dating and you begin to get serious, is to ask another couple, an older couple whose marriage you admire, to meet with you and just badger them with questions. You know, how have you handled this? How do you handle this? Now, that's more when you're getting close to being engaged. Right.
Okay, so can I just repeat it for the recording? So how do you love someone when their love language is different than your love language?
I'll just say a word for those of you that aren't familiar with the love languages. It's a book by Gary Chapman called The Five Love Languages. And one of this is a very funny story on us, but several years ago when that book first came out, Johnny and I read little bits of it and thought it was good, but then we sort of never did anything with it until we went on a vacation one summer. And we said, okay, this is a book that needs to be read in one sitting. It's an easy read. You can read the whole book in 2 hours. And let's both read it. And then tonight, we were away by ourselves. Tonight, I'll write down my five love languages in the order of importance to me. And I will write down what I think are your five love languages. Now, we'd been married over 30 years at this point, and I got his wrong. I got the first two right, but then I got the third one wrong. They talk about acts of service, words of affirmation, gifts, physical touch, and what one did I miss? Quality time. And it was really hysterical to realize, because one of his top gifts was physical touch, and I just burst out laughing because, you know, I don't like somebody to be rubbing my hair, you know, and doing all this stuff. I mean, I like hugs, but I just don't like this hair business. And so I naturally thought he wouldn't like it because it didn't appeal to me. And he said, honey, I just love it when our daughter does this. You know, and I just roared, but it was very insightful. So I think that is a wonderful book because it teaches us how. So I'm really trying hard now to do this a lot. So that's what I would say, is you have to be specific. These are ways that I need for you to love me. And maybe just take turns saying, this is something that communicates love to me. And then let you say it, and then let her say it. It's an excellent book. It's one of our favorite books to give a couple who's getting married. But it really makes more sense after you're married.
Chris, you had a question? So are Christian women uncomfortable with the idea of men as leaders? And if they are, how can men help them be more comfortable with that? That's a difficult one.
I think some women are concerned about that because they want to be an equal. And in God's sight, we are equal. We are equal. There's neither male nor female. We are all one in Christ. But a wise leader will appreciate the gifts of his counterpart. And while we want you to be a leader, that does not mean that you control us. It does not mean that you manipulate us. I don't know if this is a really funny example, but I don't know if any of you read cowboy novels. But everybody in my family reads Louis L'Amour, which he's a great prolific Western writer. And one of his lines is, "A man wants a woman to walk beside him, not behind him." And I think that's just a real picture. If you want your wife or your counterpart to walk beside you, and as you love her, she will respect you, so that submission becomes natural. It becomes the outgrowth of her respect for you. And so it's not like you're the boss. It's like you are the initiator, leader in that sense of the word. And the way we have just frankly operated is in our marriage, and it's taken us a lot of working through this, is, you know, the big decisions, basically, if one of us feels really strongly and the other doesn't feel so strongly, we go with the one who feels the strongest. If it's a major decision, and I just often have to leave it to him in the end and trust his judgment. But it hasn't been hard. It really hasn't been hard. And again, I think it grows out of my respect for him. But it is a tricky thing in today's world, and it can be a really hot button issue if you say, wives, submit to your husbands. Yes, that's the biblical imperative. But husbands are to love their wives, and then that enables the wives to submit to their husbands.
So if you have an older daughter who's making bad choices, a daughter who's an adult, what can you do and say in that situation?
Well, I think you have to be honest. You're committed to her for life because you're her dad. And nothing that she does or doesn't do will ever change your love for her. So you give her that covenant promise. I am your dad for life. And there's nothing that you can do that will make me stop loving you. I'm going to love you no matter what you do. But, sweetie, I see you making some unwise choices, and this is what I see. And I think you have to be honest. And sometimes this comes better in the form of a written note. You affirm her, you reaffirm your love for her, and then you throw out some of the concerns you have about the decision she's making. You need to be honest and say, "I just wanted you to know these are my concerns. You're 30 years old. And you will have to handle them in the way you see fit. But I felt it was unfair not to tell you how I feel about these things." But always do this seasoned with grace. And then the most important thing, of course, is to pray for her. And to pray as you pray for your kids, pray for the people, the peers in their life. Because often a peer will be able to speak into one of your children's hearts much better than a parent. So it's really important. I pray all the time for because all five of our kids are married. I say we have 10 kids. And I pray all the time for godly friends for my children that are their peers.
Henry, you've had a question for a while. So how do you play jokes on your wife in a way that's not like we would with other men? But. Yeah.
You know, Henry, I would just ask her. Say, "You know, sweetie, I have a sense of humor and I like to joke, and I sense that sometimes you don't like it. Is there a way that I could joke that you would appreciate it and that you would think it was funny?" Just flat out ask her. But don't ask her at a time when you've just bombed. You know? I want to talk about humor and joking in the family. And that's another thing, guys, by the way. Pray for your kids to have a sense of humor. That's something I pray for all of my children, because we so need that. And So that's a really important part. So how can we bring, especially living in the Washington area, we take ourselves way too seriously. And we need some levity in our homes. And so ask her. Say, give me some ideas of how we can improve the humor in our family when my jokes seem a little offensive. Give me some cliff notes.
Yeah, Annie. Okay, so how do you nip an argument in the bud as you see it ramping? You can see the on-ramp, the plane coming. How do you stop it from landing?
Right. Okay, that's a great question. A little thing that we have learned over the years is you have to remember that if you're married, you're on the same team. It's not me against you. We are on the same team. And what I found often happens that can cause friction is that we'll have an issue. Say, for example, the issue is communication. Your wife is complaining she never sees you. You're always at work. You don't have any time with her. You never talk anymore about deep things. You just talk about who's going to pick up the dry cleaning and who should we have to supper, and we're no longer communicating at a deep level. I remember when this happened to us. Specifically, I remember we had little children, about 3 to 10, and Johnny was always at work, and he would hit home at the end of the day, and there'd be 5 little people at the front door with an agenda for Dad, and so he would play with them. I'd get supper on the table, and then he was out the door to a meeting. And I felt like, you know, hello, goodbye. By the time he came home the next time, I was asleep. And I felt like our communication had dwindled to where we were just functioning. That's all we were doing. We were functioning. We were no longer sharing in our heart the way we had pre-marriage and pre-kids. But what I had learned is that we have to learn to attack the problem and not the person. It's very easy to attack the person, but the problem was our communication. It was our problem together. So when you have a problem in the marketplace, what you do is you bring your creative brains around a round table, you put the problem on the table, and you creative problem solve, right? You think of, okay, here's our issue. Our issue at this moment in our marriage was our lack of communication. And yes, I noticed it first because women usually do. That's one of their chief complaints. But I said, honey, I have something I want to talk about with you. Can we make a time to talk about it? It's best not to talk about things late at night because you're likely to say something you'll regret. So we set aside a time a few days later to talk about this issue. And I said, I feel like we are not able to communicate in the way I want to. And it's because of the season of life we're in and schedules are busy. So we have this problem, lack of communication. We put it on the table. We are on the same team. It's not his problem. It's not my problem. It's our problem together. What can we do given the season of our life when we're stressed beyond all measure to increase our time to communicate? So what we decided as we talked about this was that when he came home in the evening and hit the front door, we would tell the children that the first 20 minutes were mom and dad's. We would sit in the living room and have a cup of tea, and we would begin to talk. And we told the kids, you can be in the living room, but you can't speak. Now, the first day they came in the living room, and they wanted to have a part of all of this. And we said, no, you may not speak. Well, when they realized that we were going to be firm with this, they left because they couldn't be the center of attention. And thus began a little tradition that we kept for the next couple of years of debriefing for about 20 minutes when he first came home from work. And then I would get supper on the table while he would play with the kids. Now, we had to honestly learn how to communicate at a deeper level. And I had to learn how to ask questions that call for more than a one-word answer. You can't just say, how was your day? Fine or lousy. You have to learn that with teenagers anyway, because that's what you'll get when they come in if you say, how was your day? So you learn to ask questions that call for more than a one-word answer. You know, what's something that you felt good about today? Is there someone in your office that you enjoy talking to? What is a project that you're really burdened about? If we had 48 hours, unlimited cash, great babysitting, what would we want to do? We fail in the seriousness of our lives to dream anymore. You know, where would we want to go if we had a free vacation? Another question, you know, is there a relationship that you're concerned about? Or what is one thing that happened today to you that was fascinating or interesting. Who do you admire and why? Think of questions that call for more than a one-word answer, and then you can begin to go deeper into, you know, tell me how you're feeling about things in the home or in the marketplace. We had to work at learning how to communicate at a different level, but it was a great exercise for us in sort of warding off what could have been a real conflict. Back to your original question of me blaming him because he wouldn't talk to me. So instead, you put the problem in the center of the table and you get creative people around. But, you know, in all honesty, sometimes you just royally have to mess up and then you learn from your mistakes. That's happened to us many times. First vacation we went on with children, you know, you think in your head vacation equals rest. And when you have little kids, vacation does not equal rest. It equals running a family camp. And so, you know, we had unrealistic expectations. We came home irritated with each other. But the next time we thought through, okay, what can we do on this family vacation where he can have 2 hours alone by himself during the day, I can have 2 hours alone by myself during the day, and then we can do family stuff together. So don't be distraught when you mess up. Just ask, okay, what can we do next time to make it better?
So what do you do when, like all of us do, we have a long list, we do all of them but one, and our wife is still frustrated with us? How do we deal with that?
Well, let me just say that you are in great company because we laugh over the same scenario all the time because I have way too many ideas, and I give Johnny all these ideas, and then I'm disappointed if it doesn't happen. And so I think we can all identify with that. It's just a great thing. But what he's learned to say to me, which is really helpful, of the things that you have asked me to do, which one is the most important? And trust that answer. Yeah, yeah. So ask for clarification. And, you know, one of the things that I say to women is that we do that is really unfair to you men is it's real easy for us to have a list and you complete the list and we just think of something else. And that makes us encore women. And somebody who always wants an encore is not very much fun to live with. And we have to realize that that's something that we do very poorly and we can do to you. And perhaps some of you can do that to your wife. You'll have a list for her and she'll do as many as you can and then you think of something else. So we don't want to become encore people.
I think we're looking for what's an appropriate amount of attention to give. Why don't we ask that?
Yeah. I think it's helpful to explain to women what a man cave is because it's just an alien thing to most women. And, you know, hopefully, when John speaks to your women in 2 weeks, he will talk about that to help them understand that men need to go into their man cave. And it's not anything personal against them. It's just the way God created you. And some women need that too. We need their space. But I think, again, just verbal reassurance. Sweetie, I'm wiped out. I need just an hour alone all by myself, and then I'd like to do something with you. And this has nothing to do with you. It's just I'm dying for some space as a man. And just as you're different, men are different. And so just reassure her that it's nothing personal against her. And then do follow through on doing something special with her. Because that demonstrates to her that you want to be with her as well.